This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
The seven candidates for three seats on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors gathered at Westminster Presbyterian Church on October 18, 2007, for a forum hosted by several nonprofit environmental and transportation groups in our region. Over 50 people attended. The co-sponsors were Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, Alliance for Community Choice in Transportation, the Rivanna Conservation Society, the Piedmont Environmental Council, and Citizens for Albemarle. Candidates took questions on the impact of population growth on the community, how to slow traffic growth on the region's roads, and how to protect the quality of ground and surface waters in Albemarle County. The moderator is Len Schopa, president of the Alliance for Community Choice in Transportation.
I want to thank you also on behalf of all the organizers of this event for joining us and contributing your questions and your attention to the important issues that we're going to discuss today. As you know, the issues of growth and the environment are very prominent in our community. Just last week at the supervisors' meeting, this was the main focus of the discussion. And so it's very appropriate that at this time we've come together to talk about these topics and to engage our candidates on exactly what their positions are on these issues. So since I have only 7 minutes to do this, first a lead-off task of introducing the candidates. Let me get right to that task, and then we'll start with the questions that have been prepared ahead of time for the candidates. I'm going to go introduce the candidates in the order in which they are presented here. There's much more detailed biographies here, so I'm not going to cover all the details that are there. But if you want to follow along, you can look in your booklet there. So the first candidate featured here from the Scottsville District is our incumbent, Lindsay Dorier, from the Democratic Party. Mr. Dorier was born and raised in Scottsville, Virginia, so his roots go way back in the community. He has been a lawyer and a sole practitioner and has been active in county politics for a very long time. Second candidate from that same district is Kevin Fletcher. Mr. Fletcher has been in Albemarle County for 17 years. He owns and operates his own landscape and property management business and also acts as an organic farm consultant. Third candidate from this magisterial district is Denny King. Okay. Mr. King came to Albemarle County 15 years ago from Los Angeles, where he had a high-profile career in the media industry. And he continues to work in the media industry, working with a number of local people, such as my colleague Larry Sabato, I just learned. Now, moving on to the Rivanna District. In the Rivanna District, we have two candidates. First, the incumbent, Ken Boyd. Ken is the chairman of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. He is a small business owner who started his financial planning business in 1991 after a 23-year banking career. And he has been in the county since 1981. Also in the Rivanna District is Marcia Joseph, representing the Democratic Party. She has been a resident in Albemarle County since 1984. She also has been a small business owner with a focus on landscape architecture and planning. And you probably know her best. I'm in the news, following her in the newspapers as the chair of the Albemarle County Planning Commission. So moving on then finally to the Whitehall District. We start with our incumbent, David Wyant, representing the Republican Party. Mr. Wyant is currently vice chairman of the Board of Supervisors. And when I saw the number of generations that his family goes back, I didn't know someone could go back quite that far. So 10 generations he's been in Albemarle County, and I think sets the record for longevity in the local area from among our candidates. His career before joining the Board of Supervisors was at the Virginia Department of Transportation, where he worked for 30 years. Okay. So those are our candidates tonight. Oh, I'm sorry. One more candidate from the Whitehall District, Anne Huckle Malik, representing the Democratic Party. She grew up in Albemarle and graduated from Albemarle High School. Since 1983, she and her husband have managed the family farm in Earliesville, where they have raised their two daughters. So we have there our candidates, an interesting group, and we're going to start with our questions in a moment. And I think with the first question, Jack, is it okay if we go in the order of the magisterial districts that we just covered?
Yes, and the randomization ended up that I've just been trying to write down.
Okay, thank you. So I'll just go in that order then. Okay, so if you want to follow along with me again in your booklet, we're going to read out loud the questions that are going to be addressed by each of the candidates. So question one, if you'll bear with me, it's our longest question, but in some ways the most interesting and broad, important question for us to think about today, asking us to think about not just the immediate stakes of the issues that we're talking about tonight, but the long-term consequences of the decisions we make across generations. So the concept of intergenerational justice asks what the living owe to those who come after them. It suggests that present generations may be obligated by considerations of justice not to pursue policies that create benefits for themselves, but impose costs on those who will live in the future. Intergenerational justice, essentially a fairness issue, examines the moral side of sustainability. Population growth imposes costs, financial, environmental, and social, on future generations of residents. At our current rate of development, in 50 or 100 years, there will be less open space, more traffic, higher taxes to pay for needed infrastructure, and in the minds of many, generally a less attractive quality of life. So here are the questions then that we're asking each candidate to address. To what extent would you, as a county supervisor, consider your vote for additional growth and development to be a moral issue involving our obligations to future Albemarle County residents? How would your answer to this first question inform your votes on specific growth-related issues where individual property rights may clash with community efforts to limit development potential? So as you may know, these questions were prepared before some of the most recent developments. So we don't address specific issues that were discussed last week and so on in our question, but we very much hope that the candidates will, in answering this first question, not just talk in general terms about intergenerational justice and their views of the morality involved in this question, but also how specifically they would apply their ideas about the morality of intergenerational justice to the issues that are before the county right now. So we're going to start, in this case, with Scottsville, starting with Mr. King. And you have 2 minutes. Each candidate will have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Len. After I read the question, I researched it for some time. And I believe that intergenerational justice must be given equal consideration to social justice. Certainly, we all have an obligation to leave our future generations with a healthy planet, as well as other societal resources. I did read something today that was most alarming, and I would like to share that with you. At the current consumption rates, it will take two planet Earths to sustain humans in less than 50 years. That's a very, very disturbing story. Our planet is quickly and rapidly going into an ecological deficit. And that ecological deficit is coming at an earlier and earlier date every year. We cannot continue to go on at the rate we are going and treating this planet in the manner that we have been treating it. There is something called intergenerational justice, and we must make sure that we provide those who will follow us a healthy planet. Our renewable resources are becoming very, very quickly unrenewable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker from the same district is Mr. Dorier.
Thank you. Intergenerational justice is, I guess I've considered it subconsciously in my votes on the Board of Supervisors. I think that most of the issues we deal with are growth issues. 75% of the issues are growth issues. And we need to determine what type of world we're leaving our children in the future. And I believe we consider all these issues before we vote. We work to ensure that the public is protected. And that's the main issue that we work towards. So with our roads, with our water system, with our schools, we work towards developing a system that will provide growth and development in a moral scale that will survive for future generations. I believe that we can work together to implement the ordinances that we pass for additional growth and development. I believe that as an intergenerational, we need to leave the world a better place than what we found it. Following in that example. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll turn then to the final candidate in the Scottsville District, Mr. Fletcher.
I believe that all decisions made by the board are certainly moral issues, whether it's budget, but especially since we're talking about our growth issues, whether it's a decision that's affecting the citizens who live in Albemarle County today, or 1 year, or 5 years. You know, we have to do a better job of planning on how we are going to sustain Albemarle County and how we are going to pay for our growth. And that is where, you know, to me, I think where the county has failed in the sense of master planning. Master planning is imperative to the success of growth in Albemarle County. And to me, the fact that we continue to rezone strictly because a person who owns a piece of property wants to go ahead, I want to get my property rezoned. And we move forward on that without a master plan, which goes completely against the comprehensive plan, is a moral issue. Because we are then putting the burdens of the lack of planning onto future generations, or the people who, as currently, the people who are living here right now. Many of the problems of costs of growth are just being passed on to the citizens now and will be passed on into the future. And we need to do a better job of planning. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for staying right within the time limits. We'll turn now to the next district, Whitehall District, starting with Mr. Wyant.
Walls are both right and wrong behavior. Conservation is good behavior. Wasting our natural resources is a bad behavior. Growth is, we need to manage the growth. Excessive growth or no growth, I think, is unhealthy. what we've seen here in the county, and as an engineer and understands geology and resources, we have a shortage of a knowledge on the resources that we all depend upon, and I'm talking about like water and all. How do we survive? If you do not have those resources there, you cannot live in the public system where we provide public water and sewer, and you cannot live in the rural area, and that's why we monitor the groundwater. But looking to the future and looking after our future generations, as you've heard, our family's lived here for many years, and I hope my children and my grandchildren will be able to do the same. If you ever go to the transfer station and you realize how much trash and things that we are burying our children of tomorrow, there's 13 compacted tractor trailer loads a day leaving Alamar County. It's involved in the city and the county, and some of the haulers do not use that. That is a huge amount of trash just from our locality. We have got to work and get involved in the recycling program more than we are today. The one big one, all of us have a lot of computers and things. How do we recycle those? This is a major interest to me. We have got to look at how technology is burying us in some of these new things that we haven't really accounted for, that have some different kinds of pollutants and other things that is much different than what we've encountered in the past.
Thank you. So we'll now turn to the other Whitehall candidate, Ms. Malik.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight. I am a natural history educator, and my childhood has given me the background to really appreciate the natural world. It is an issue of morality to respect the natural world and to leave a future of resources and sustainability for our children and our grandchildren. We need to do no harm, to leave a place better than we found it. These are the tenets we were all raised with. I do not believe I have a right to neglect the land and cause damage to my neighbor or to someone far away. And land conservation is a personal commitment. It's also a county commitment, and we're fortunate that so many residents in our county and in our government accept that responsibility. But where is our sense of community? The we is an important partner to the me. Today, the we seems to be buried under mistrust. While the we seeks growth in livable communities to protect open spaces and to save resources, in voting, the basis of government is an accepted community standard. How will we live in proximity to each other and provide services for each other? These are choices we can make. We have the power from our legislature to make these kinds of choices. Do we have the political will to do so? We should seek to be a sustainable community, to live within our natural means and pay our bills today, rather than leaving a debt of resources and finances for our children. Thanks.
Thank you. We're now ready to move to our third district, starting with Ms. Joseph.
To what extent would I, as a county supervisor, consider a vote for additional growth and development to be a moral issue involving our obligations to future Albemarle residents? It's an extremely...
You didn't hear the question.
The question is, to what extent would you, as a county supervisor, consider your vote for additional growth and development to be a moral issue involving our obligations to future Albemarle County residents? It's an extremely important issue. One of the things as Board of Supervisors member that I would do is to make sure that our growth boundaries are not elastic. We've got plenty of room right now for any growth that we need in any future, especially in the next 4 years. We've got millions of square feet of retail space that's already been approved, and we've got last count, 14,000 residential units approved. We really have to stop looking at those growth boundaries as if they can move out. One of the things we talk about is when we have all of this excess of retail space is that it's not going to encourage anybody to do any adaptive reuse of buildings. So when buildings go out of use, they're just going to go to green space because it's a whole lot easier to build. I think we need to start thinking about that aspect of sustainability of our community also, is that if we really are concerned about providing these spaces for the future, providing green spaces, and continuing to really protect our environment, we have to make sure that those growth boundaries stay where they are. We've got a couple of master plans in the process now, and I know there's talk about expanding growth boundaries, but I want to tell you, it should be very, very important reasons why we expand them now, because we still have plenty of area to build in. So as a supervisor, yes, that would be my commitment to future generations, that we really have to be very, very careful about doing things like that in the near future.
Last up, Mr. Boyd.
Thank you. I think it's an obligation of everybody to be sensitive to our environment and do as little harm as we can during the years that we're here and that we're in charge. And certainly it's important to, as a supervisor, to ensure that you do that. But if you want to talk about the moral and intergenerational justice, we have to be intellectually honest, and we have to consider that maybe decisions that we make now may not be, if they're irreversible decisions, what future generations would want to do. And I use as an example for that, and I think you all know, is a decision made by the Board of Supervisors in 1982 when they created the revenue sharing agreement, which is irreversible, can't be changed, and in 2009 it's going to cost the taxpayers of Alamar County about $17 million that's going to be paid to the city. Now, the point I'm trying to get to is that every generation should be very sensitive to the environment. They should do as little harm as they can to that environment. But we also must balance and give some thought that with technological changes and enhancements that we can do it today, do we want to tie the hands of future generations for things that they cannot get out of and they can't undo because of what we do now? So that's just a little different angle than what's been said here before. I think everybody at this table feels that it's very important that we do as little harm to our environment as we can, and that we certainly take care of the ecology and systems today, and we don't leave big price tags for the future. But we also don't want to tie their hands forever.
Thank you very much. So in just a moment, we're going to hear from all the councilors again, and this is an opportunity for councilors, all the supervisors and the candidates to address the comments made by the other candidates today. So just to try to encourage a little more speaking to each other, I thought I'd highlight a few of the things that I just heard. And we heard some of the decision rules or some of the statements of morality that each of the candidates thought captured the idea of morality. A couple of them said that the key is to leave the environment better than we found it. Okay. Another thing I heard is we should not use it all up two times, right? So we shouldn't use all of our resources and leave nothing to the next generation. And I heard from Mr. Boyd, we should do as little harm as we can to the environment. So all these are nice general statements, and that's what the question asked for. But I hope in this next minute we can hear some real specifics about how exactly you would operationalize these concepts. We heard from a couple of candidates some specifics. Ms. Joseph said that she would not shift the growth boundaries unless it was absolutely necessary. Mr. Wyant said that he would want to find more ways to recycle. So I'd be interested if other candidates could address those issues or other specific issues that you think are relevant to applying these ideas of morality. We'll go in the same order, starting with Mr. King.
We clearly have a choice in front of us right now, to consume or to conserve. And I think it's a very important choice. We know the terrible news about our ecosystem. We know that we are rapidly approaching at an earlier date every year our ecological deficit. And we simply have to be more cognizant of the way we steward our county. And it's about effective, good, moral, and knowledgeable stewardship. And I believe that the board made a tragic decision last Wednesday night we're going to have to make hard decisions that will not please everyone, but we have to make the decisions that are best for our county now and in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Doyer.
I'm glad you brought that up, Denny. Last week I voted with the people that found fault with the ordinance that was presented to us. The people that voted for so-called private property rights don't want to devalue the property that we have already in the mountains. But we also are as environmentally conscious as the people who voted for it. This is a case where we've got individual rights versus property rights versus community, I guess, benefits. I think we can have both. We can have both positions. We can have property rights and community benefits working together to come up with a common solution.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher.
Well, I guess in the weighing of property rights and community benefits, I think that, you know, you take an instance like from very much like Ravenna Village or Biscuit Run, the community benefits of that voted by the Board of Supervisors far outweighed the people who live on in the growth area. They were very much in favor, very much not in favor of that. But the board decided that the community benefits far outweighed the people who live in that community, who live in the growth area. Their opinion really did not matter. But the community benefits, the board thought, was far greater than the property rights of the people who live in the growth area. Thank you. That's it.
Okay. Moving to the Whitehall District, Mr. Wyant.
I was going talk about a couple of. We got 5% of our area in the growth areas, and we do master planning in that. But understand, master planning is a form of development, and all. The point that I've been getting to on the natural resources is that we need to support whatever we have by our resources. If you go and I'll use the example out in the rural area. If you cannot get water, how can you have a hose? How can you take it? We do not know that data yet. And that's we have a lack of information so we can make great informed decisions. What we did in years past in zoning is pretty much we looked at the county as flat and like to have this here, that, there. Now, we have not looked at those resources. It takes some effort, but the data is out there, and we need to collect that data so we get accurate data that we can make informed decisions with.
Ms. Malik?
It was a great disappointment to me last year when I learned that the water control ordinance that we have worked hard on for several years didn't have enough teeth to be able to deny development in an area that didn't have any water. So we definitely have somewhere to go in that way. I agree with Marcia about the hard edge to the growth area. We as a county have made a commitment to the residents in the growth area that they will also have a wonderful place to live, that they will not be stuck so high in density that they're living accommodations become a miserable situation. We need green areas and amenities in the growth areas so that they're wonderful places to live that do make less of an impact on the environment. I'm happily willing to tie the hands of future generations in my family by putting an easement on our farm about 10 years ago. My children were happy to do that, and we'll just have to live with that decision, but we've never looked back.
Thank you. We'll move then to the third district, the Ravenna District, starting with Ms. Joseph.
Well, I heard property rights come up, so I thought maybe I'd address property rights. In the rural areas, you are currently able to disturb over 10,000 square feet of area without any kind of erosion or sediment control. You can cut down every tree you want to without any erosion sediment control plans. These are the kinds of things that we allow in the rural areas because in our comp plan and in our zoning ordinance, the highest and best use of the land in the rural areas is designated as agriculture or forestry.
Those are the kinds of things that you can, those are your rights in the rural areas. You can't do those sorts of things in other zoning districts without site plans or erosion and sediment control measures. So if you decide that the highest and best use of your rural areas is residential, then you ought to abide by the same rules and regulations that people have to in residential districts.
All right, Mr. Boyd.
I want to just clarify something at the beginning here. There was mention of the meeting last Wednesday night and the vote that was taken there. Well, actually, that vote was rescinded, and there was no decision made on any of these issues, and they will come back before the board. So clarify that to begin with. I don't think that we need to have rigid outlines on the growth areas, and the reason I say that is because we have got people moving here, and they're going to keep moving here. It's going to continue. Now, the growth rate is way down. It's much less now than it was 4 years ago when I went on the board. It's less than 1%. I don't know how low we want to go before we get past the point of even of being practical for us to happen. But I do know that I'm not going to destroy our existing neighborhoods in the urban areas, who I hear from all the time, who think they're paying for the rural areas at their personal expense because of what we're doing to their areas. So we have to pay attention to that. If we have to be a little bit flexible in order to provide the necessary amenities and keep their neighborhoods in good shape, then I'm willing to do that.
Well, thanks to all the candidates for addressing this first issue and thinking seriously with us about these issues of intergenerational justice. We're going to move now to the second question area. I should remind you that we will have a chance to come back to each of these issue areas with questions from you. You all have note cards, so if you feel like the candidates didn't address some specific issues connected to intergenerational justice that you would like them to talk about, go ahead and fill out those index cards and give them to us at the break. So our second question is in the area of transportation. Traffic on Route 29 is projected to increase considerably in the coming years to as many as 100,000 cars a day by 2025. This traffic projection is driven in part by the 17,832 housing units that have already been approved in Albemarle County and Charlottesville since 2000. The Places 29 Master Plan proposes to solve the projected traffic and pollution problems on Route 29 through the creation of a better network of parallel roads, bus rapid transit, grade-separated interchanges, and better facilities and access for pedestrians and bicyclists. So we have a very specific question here. Do you support these plans for the 29 corridor? If so, how do you propose to fund these improvements? If not, how do you think our community should solve these transportation problems? So whether the question is yes or no to the support for the 29 North plan, we want to hear either how you're going to pay for it and actually do it, or how you would solve it instead. So we're, according to the randomized order, we're sticking, do I understand this correctly, Jack, to the order of the districts, but we're switching.
No, in fact, we didn't rank. Why don't you vary the order of districts?
Okay,
well?
So we'll do that. So we'll start with Whitehall and reverse the order of the speakers for Whitehall, then we'll go to Rivanna and then to Scottsville. So starting in the Whitehall district, Ms. Malik.
I've been on the chart committee since the year 2000. That's the Charlottesville Albemarle Regional Transportation Citizens Committee. And from at monthly meetings, we have studied the land use and transportation connection and been involved in the long-range planning for the use of federal transportation funds. Our community needs a combination of different improvements to reach a real solution for 29. One road will not suffice. We need transit in the form of rideshare, bus rapid transit, as was mentioned, and sometime way in the future, perhaps rail. We need to save the right-of-way for that rail to come in. Our developments that have been approved since 2004 should have been bike and ped and transit ready, which means that the long-range plan that was adopted by the policymakers in the city and the county agreed that this was a good concept, that new growth would be prepared for bike lanes, sidewalks, bus shelters and turn lanes, so that we would not have to be refitting in a future time these newer developments. To move the cars we have now, I do hope the community will come back to an idea that was here in the 1980s to build a grade-separated interchange, starting with Hydraulic Road. The original plan was a little diamond shape and could have been built for about $18 million in 1988. So we are coming around again to consider some things we've had on our plate before. As far as funding, a combination of private investments connected by publicly funded segments, such as private streets and subdivisions, but connected by public road building. Using proffers from rezonings when those rezonings truly benefit the community. And from bonds approved by referendum. Voters should choose whether to use the general fund or a gas tax or a transportation authority to find the funding. Transportation Options Working Group that I was on a year ago analyzed these options and gave a report to the board over a year ago. I hope that it will be taken into consideration.
Thank you. Also from the Whitehall District, Mr. Wyant.
Yes, I'm supportive of the 29 places study, but let me just give you some caveats to that. I think, and we saw the ones where the students at UVA presented a cross-section of the road. But look at the problems we've had of late of folks crossing the road and the pedestrians have been hit in Ryle Road, 29, and others. That's a nice-looking plan with the trees planted in the middle. Having worked for VDOT and spent many nights out there working on those interstates and others, this is the way 29 will eventually end up being. It is very, very difficult to do maintenance work in a middle corridor of a road that comes like an expressway. I would think that we would need in the middle to provide a safe haven. If you were standing in a 6-foot grass strip and your pedestrian got halfway across and cars are going by you on both sides, say less 45 miles an hour, you would not feel comfortable in that. I don't think anybody would feel comfortable. We have got to come up with a better means there. Maybe a raised concrete barrier. I do not like the look, but we can still do landscaping on the top of the minimum maintenance efforts. They have done it up in Northern Virginia. But on the outside, we can do our streetscaping and everything and access into our businesses and into our neighborhoods. So that's up on 29. The big gorilla in this thing, if you look at the amount of traffic goes into UVA every day, that's why we got to start looking at this bus transit. I think you're going to see VDOT. We have asked VDOT many times to give us more money, all of us, and we've asked y'all to request it too. But I think you're going to find them going more to transit, supporting that, rather than the old traditional way they've done with the road system. So we got funding, we need to look at bonds, my time is running close, I know, service districts and other means. So we got to think innovative as we deal with this traffic issue in town.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move next to the Rivanna District, and we're going to start this time with Mr. Boyd.
Thank you. I support a better network of parallel roads. I am very much behind bus rapid transit. I think that we need better facilities for access to pedestrians and to bicyclists. And I think all these aspects of the Places 29 are things that we need to look at very closely. I'm not as convinced about the grade-separated interchanges at this point. I want to hear more study and I want to hear more input from the public on it. We've been hearing from the business community that are very concerned about this becoming an expressway rather than a main street for our area. I'm a little bit suspect on these projected traffic things, and I'm not a traffic engineer, but I have listened to some testimony where we 5 and 10 years ago had the same amount of traffic on 29 that we do today, that it has not exponentially grown, even though we've added more development to that area. Now, what I'm hearing is that with the dispersity of retail and office and employment centers, it's going to take some pressure off of 29, and I think that needs to be folded into it somewhere. Obviously, to fund these things, these issues, we're going to need to have a combination of local and private dollars with as much emphasis on the private dollars as we can put to get money from developers for it, and state and federal monies, too. And I'm real proud of the fact that I was able to work with the city, and we went to Washington, D.C., Mayor Brown and I did, with the contingent, and we were able to work with Senator Warner's office and get the money to finish the last economic hurdle to the Meadow Creek Parkway. And so I think it's going to take collaborative effort to do those things. I've had the experience and opportunity to work with them before, and I think I'm positioned to do that in the future too.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Joseph.
I want you to all know that on the 23rd, next Tuesday, The Planning Commission will have another one of our lovely three-hour work sessions on Places 29, and we'll be talking about these issues. Now is the time for people to get really involved and take a look at this, because we are planning for the future. Places 29 is a very interesting plan because its build-out is not 20 years like we normally see in a comprehensive plan, but it's like a forever. This is what ultimately we would like to see happen. So if you talk about planning for generations to come, this is the plan. We expect that 50, 60, 70 years is when this will come in completion. So take a look at that. As far as actually supporting it at this time, I'm still looking at it. I still think that there are things that we need to tweak. I love the idea that there seems to be this collective consciousness now of people really interested in talking about transit and talking about bicycles, because we weren't doing this a few years ago. So it's time. Apparently, the gas prices got at high enough, and we're starting to really understand that we need to do some other means of transportation here. As far as the money is concerned, I think that we have to start prioritizing these things. What kind of a community do we want to be? Do we want to be a healthy community? And I mean physically healthy, and get people out there and provide a safe means for them to get back and forth on their feet and on bicycles. So we have to look at these things and prioritize how we're going to pay for them. I'm very skeptical of thinking that we're going to get developers to pay for everything, because you know what? They want something in return. And I think that's another place where we get these sort of elastic growth area boundaries. And I think we have to be very, very careful about that seduction. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move to the Scottsville District then, and we're going to start this time with Mr. Dorier.
We've got a lot of work to do on 29 North. I support this plan that we've got spent time and effort and money working on. And basically, it calls for parallel roads. It calls for improvements to Route 29. I would like to see an eastern bypass. I would also like to see the Meadow Creek Parkway finally built. We need mass transit on Route 29 North. More and more people are living farther and farther out on 29 North, and I agree with the speaker who said that the University of Virginia has a lot of connection with 29 North. It's got the research parks out there, and you're going to see more and more bus driving out 29 and mass transit. I also think that we can make these recommendations, but who's going to pay for it? And I think the bonds that we talk about have to be approved by the voters, and so I would be in favor of a bond issue with a referendum attached to it, and we can help fund it through the bonds and profits from the developers.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher.
I certainly, approve of what I've seen of the 29 master plan. I think that truly we need to get traffic off of the main interchange of 29 North. We need to use the parallel roads, and those are certain areas that I believe that the developers could certainly be helping to pay for in those areas as far as their proffers, because many of the of their developments, I think, like which are Hollymead Train Town Center is already basically done, but certainly those were areas of which they could have put more money towards their parallel roads, which takes the traffic off. We need to look at the bond referendum. That is something I hate that more or less the county is more or less kind of going in debt after we are actually a rather wealthy county in the sense that we. Our revenue increases by about on an average of $18 million, and over the past 4 years, would be $72 million that we really don't putting really money aside towards our traffic, and this is something areas that we should have been doing. As far as other funding, I don't think that I think the state has made it pretty clear that they're not really going to be funding anything, so it's going to come down to pretty much proffers and a bond issue. Thank you.
All right. And finally, Mr. King.
Thank you. Well, I fully support the affordable plans. And I underscore affordable. I don't think we could begin to afford grade separation. I think we have to look at the parallel roads, clean and efficient bus service, not diesel belching black smoke buses. I was behind one this afternoon and it's poured out. I think if we have hybrid cars, why can't we start looking at hybrid buses or electric trolleys? I salute people like Meredith Richards, who has worked diligently on the transportation issue in our county for some time. And I think she's making slow progress. We have to look at not only bicyclists and even more contemporary modes of transport today. I think the Segways will start making a bigger appearance if we had effective travel ways for these different types of transportation you see. With respect to the funding, it's possible that we may have to create tollways or a model of a tollway. I also believe that there are possibilities in the private sector for funding. We have to have this necessary revenue in order to implement any of these plans. They all take additional funding. And I think we have to work closer and more diligently with not only our state delegates and our state legislators or senators, but we have to also take a trip occasionally to Washington. And we have to court our federal representatives, our senators, and our congressmen. We see all the time these tremendous earmarks for airports to nowhere. Thank you.
Well, it's impressive that that's the only time we've had to hear the timer go off. Everyone has been very good about staying to their time limits. So in a minute, we're going to hear one-minute answers from each of these candidates in the same order, responding to each other and addressing this question one more time. But to try to focus the answers again a little bit more, I mean, everyone actually did a great job of giving some general views on the specific Places 29 proposals that are before the community. I found a lot of people seem to support the idea of transit and different kinds of transit for the region. So the big question in the area of transit seems to be how to pay for it. It's very unlikely that proffers or the state are going to pay for transit. So the question is that I would like each of the panelists to answer is, would they support the specific proposal that Ms. Malik mentioned, putting a gas tax referendum before the voters as a way to pay for more transit? Is this specific proposal one that you could support? If not, how would you pay for the increased transit that you just spoke so kindly about? And let's see. Second, the main area in which I heard disagreement with the proposal was grade-separated interchanges. Some people thought that they wanted the whole plan, they wanted the grade-separated interchanges in the Places 29 areas. Other people were very skeptical about whether that part should be done. So the question for here is, if you are not going to build grade-separated interchanges between Forest Lakes, Hollymead, and the Hollymead Town Center side of 29, how are the pedestrians, the bikes, and the segways going to get across? How are you going to build this area that's going to be more conducive to alternative transportation if you don't have grade-separated interchanges? So some specific questions for each of the candidates. We'll start in the same order with Ms. Malik.
Oh, excellent. The pedestrian crossings were the first things to be tossed when the second round of budget things came along for the airport road intersection, sadly. And there was just a letter in the Post last week by a resident of Forest Lake saying, we have this great shopping place across the street and I live in a very pedestrian-friendly neighborhood, but there's no way to get there from here. So bringing back the concept that we might have to have a little higher cost in order to have our facilities work better is important. I do not favor a expressway a high-speed road on 29 because it is our main street. Just because we separate through traffic at some of our primary corners does not mean people have to go fast. And we know from the statisticians and the highway experts that the highest capacity, which means the most number of people who can travel on a road, is achieved at slower speeds, 35 or 45 miles an hour.
Thank you. Mr. Wyatt.
Pedestrians and bikes, you may have overpasses or underpasses has to be considered. You need to provide some safe crossover for the pedestrians and the bikers, and I think it has to be considered. Another point, I don't think speed is an issue with the road as much as you would think. It's the smooth flow of traffic, the timing of the lights and all. And I think if you look, well, we're having good movement, you don't end up making it like a parking lot out there with the lights working. The traffic modeling that has been done has shown that. The caution on one thing on traffic modeling. In engineering, there are many models that you can use. My side and my profession and what I do, I would question the model to make sure it's a valid model. Different models work in different situations. I know they've done a lot of study with it. I've not been directly involved. I'm not on that committee, but that's where I would go to make sure the model does predict exactly what will occur at that when it's in place.
Okay. Mr. Boyd?
I had the opportunity to visit China about a year ago, and spent some time in Beijing. And there they had a very elaborate system of overpasses and tunnels under the roads for pedestrian and bicycle places. I think that's a way that we could provide here. So when I said I was not in favor, or I didn't say I wasn't in favor of the interchange, I said I wanted to study more about the interchange's impact on the businesses and there. But I definitely think utilizing either tunneling or overpasses that are for pedestrians or bicyclists would be a big improvement there.
Okay, thank you. I notice everybody's skipping the gas tax referendum.
I didn't use all my time. You want me to comment on it? Did I have 30 seconds?
Yeah.
First of all, it wouldn't be a gas tax referendum because we don't have the authority from the state to do that. What it would be a referendum on a bond issue. And actually, the Board of Supervisors has been working on this for a couple of years to bring forth a bond issue like that. I think that the board is pretty much in favor of it. I personally favor a bond referendum, which we take to the public. I've said that all along.
A bond referendum to pay for transit, not just infrastructure.
For infrastructure and transit. I think we're going to package it together in a rather large bond referendum.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Joseph.
Well, I would love it to go talk to Toscano and Cree Deeds and anybody else that we could talk to and see if we could get the ability to have a gas tax and use that, because we certainly need it. If the state isn't going to start to pay for our roads, then maybe we locally are going to have to take responsibility. Not maybe. Yes, we are going to have to take responsibility. So I think that those two guys need to go to Richmond and work for us and help us out with that. I do support the bond referendum. Also, I think people need input. They need to know what we're doing. Okay, grade separated interchanges. I think it's extremely important, again, because we don't want to keep developing green space to keep those businesses working, to keep them healthy, to make sure that they do work well. And the grade separate interchanges, there are several business people out there who are scared to death of them. I want to sit down with those people and find out what exactly it is that they're worried about and make sure that we can do some designs that will make that work, their businesses work. Yeah, I'm stopped, Jeff. I've stopped.
Okay. Thanks. So we're moving to the Scottsville District, and Mr. Doerr.
Two issues. First thing we're going to do is fix that sinkhole on 29 North. I think we can afford to do that now. Secondly, grade-separated interchanges, I think, are probably going to be necessary for the pedestrians and bicyclists. I was fortunate enough to go as a guest of the PEC to Chapel Hill, look at some houses down there in that bus system, and I noticed that bus system was a free bus system. You just hop on a bus in one town and go to the next town. So it seems to me that if we fund the mass transit, we've got maybe to get people out of their cars, we've got to provide a free ride. So I'd look into that, and I'd also look into revenue bonds.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher.
Certainly, I agree with Marsha in the sense that we need to lean on our representatives to give us more options. The gas tax certainly is a good option. It's a viable option, and we need to pressure them to give us that ability. Certainly, the grade separated interchanges are a good idea. We need to try to get that done, but I think many of our highway system, especially on the 29 North, once you get to Forest Lakes, we have gone away from what the neighborhood model was, in which you try to have everything within walking distance. It doesn't fit the neighborhood model, and I think that is now we are trying to, as we often are, trying to come back and try to fix something that should have been fixed in the first place earlier. Thank you.
Mr. King.
Well, I would first like to remind Mr. Dorier that before the developers turned the Hollymead Shopping Center Hill into a moonscape and had incredible runoff, we didn't have sinkholes on 29. I firmly believe in the pedestrian overpasses. I said yesterday in a meeting, and I think I was quoted as saying this, that I would rather approach something that costs tens of thousands rather than tens of millions and take baby steps. And I believe that the erection of pedestrian crossovers would make far more sense than tunneling under our roadway systems. With respect to how do we pay for this, I also believe the bond referendum. I believe that I would like to see some form of gas tax, whether it's a 0.5%, whether it's a 0.5 penny. And that could all go to the revenue needed for our transportation upgrades on 29.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you, candidates, for enduring this marathon series of questions. We're through two of our big areas of questions, and we're now to the third and final area. When we finish going through area three here, we will have a break. Okay. This is a question that deals especially with water issues. Current land use trends pose growing threats to the quality of ground and surface waters in Albemarle County and throughout the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Meanwhile, residential and commercial water demand is steadily increasing. What measures would you support to, 1, protect and improve water quality, 2, pay for necessary water supply and pollution control infrastructure improvements, and 3, manage and conserve limited water resources during times of drought? So again, we have a question about what would you do to solve the problems and how would you pay for it? So we're going to start this time in the Rivanna District, switching orders and starting with Ms. Joseph.
Okay. The first question has to do with protecting and improving water quality, and I think that one of the things that we could do is place stream buffers around all of our intermittent streams all over Albemarle County. It's already more than 50% of the land is already protected by that, and we just should continue that. That's one of the areas that we can do. I've been talking to people, and there's one person who's very concerned about all of the erosion that's happened at Hollymead Town Center. He wants to go to DCR and ask for more stringent erosion and sediment control plans. So there's people out there that want to do something like that. Right now, with a lot of rezoning requests, not all of them, but some of them, we've been looking at making them 80% capture rate. So 80% of the silt is captured, 20% still goes by. Current regulations are 60-40. So those are some of the things that we could start looking at as a community. To pay for this, that's very, very complex because Rivanna Service Sewer and Water Authority and Albemarle Service Authority are these entities out there that there's not a whole lot of control over. I think it's important right now that we start a communication with those folks to know what's going on. We're facing $140 million upgrade for our water system. And I don't know, I read someplace else the other day, $39 million for upgrades on some of the pollution controls in the water systems too. So for just for storage, $140 million, $39 million for upgrades. A lot of this is expected to come from ratepayers. We need to make sure that the people who live in our urban areas are not, this burden isn't placed on them altogether. Now, I know that there's hookup fees, but hookup fees for water and sewer are not going to pay for everything. We really need to start looking at some of these rezonings that come down the way and justifying some of the proffer requests with this. Sorry.
Yep.
I didn't get to the last one.
Okay. Mr. Boyd?
Well, first of all, I want to say that as the person whose first year on the board inherited the Hollyview Town Center, moonscaping, as you put it, I spent an awful lot of time trying to improve what we do in rezonings in the future. And at that time, based on state standards, we would allow 60% sediment control. If we could control 60% of it, then that met the state standards. And that was what was approved of that. Every major project since then, we have pushed that up to 80%, which is what we're being told is scientifically as much as we could expect to practically get in that. So I support that very much. And I think it's very important that we not lose sight of the fact that even our Stream Watch report indicated that the real danger to our streams for sediment is in our development areas, not in our rural areas, because the higher the density of the housing and the development is, the more harm it does to those streams. So we need to be thinking about what we're going to do there and continue to try and take advantage of increased standards there. To pay for water supply and pollution, I think that water supply will be paid for based on a formula that is being established by the authority, a certain amount in connection fees for future growth needs that we need, a certain amount of increased cost to take care of all the infrastructure problems that we've had from 50 years of pipes that have been deteriorating. On the other side, I think we're already talking about a utility district to take care of the pollution control with better stormwater management. We know we're going to have more expensive stormwater management to deal with, and we're looking at utility districts in order to fund that. Managing our water resources during a drought quickly, I think we're doing a much better job than we were in 2002. We've been managing this drought a lot better with proactive initiatives that we put in place, and that's why our water is surviving. And you know how long it's been since it's rained. I hope we get some rain tonight. But we have done a much better job of conserving it by proactively stepping out and putting in the drought warnings ahead of time. Last, in 2002, we waited until we were 50% down in our reservoirs before we did anything. We've stepped it up this time.
Thank you. So we're going to move next to the Scottsville District and have the questions addressed, starting with Mr. Fletcher.
Certainly, I think that we need to try to have all of our rezonings need to be moved up to the 80% capture. I think that that it's no coincidence that you look at the Rivanna Reservoir. It is both fed by the Meacham and the Meechunk, which come out of western Albemarle County, which was a huge growth area, both in the Free Union area, which would be a rural area, but many, many houses were built there, and all the Crozet area, which is one of our growth areas. That is why we have one of the situations we have with Rivanna, because it has filled full of sediment. Which I think is obvious by the overflow when you look at the Hollymead Town Center. I think the fellow came in and had his own little scientific report that 70% of the sediment in the Hollymead Lake came within the past 5 years. And the mindset of the Board of Supervisors is that they are going to reapprove the site plan, and they say, well, I'll tell you what, if we reapprove your site plan, will you then fix your problem? When it should be, why don't you fix your problem, and then we will approve your site plan. Pay for necessary water. I'm sad to say that's going to probably come from higher water rates. I think that the Rivanna Water and Sewage and the Service Authority have made that perfectly clear. Of course, there might be referendums or something but pretty much higher rates. We may cut taxes, but we raise your rates in water. Manage and conserve limited water. I think we're doing a good job right now of how we're trying to conserve water. I'm very proud of our community and how they work together to do that. Thank you.
Mr. King?
Well, it's my feeling that water supply and water quality are the single most important issues in a sustainable quality of life. Without it,
we don't have the quality of life. It was announced today that Atlanta, Georgia has 81 days of water remaining. Our current supply, our supply capacity is now roughly 500 million gallons. If we have this new dam built, and if we have it built by 2012, we will increase our capacity by fivefold, increasing from 500 million gallons of storage capacity to over 2 billion. My question is, can we make it till 2012 with 17,000 plus dwellings approved since 2000? And since 2000, I think that we simply have to address and stop the approval of all of these developments of homes and condos and apartments and commercial buildings until we have an adequate water supply. Do I still have time?
30
seconds. Okay, but I think that's all I have to say.
End on a high note. Okay, Mr. Dorier.
I agree with Denny that water quality is one of our most important issues. I think we need to support possibly the 20%, 80%, 20% runoff rule that is before the Planning Commission. We need to look at ways we can stockpile water. I think out west they've got runoff is placed in barrels and different containers. I think they call that gray water. And it's used out there over and over, recycled. I think we should look into those methods of using water. That would reduce the cost, hopefully, if we use it over and over again. Along those lines, we need to come up with a way of managing and conserving our water. And right now, during a period of drought, we've got all these rules dealing with conservation. We should apply those rules during times of non-drought. We should apply them year-round, and they should be expanded upon often. They shouldn't just come on once every 3 years when we have a drought. So they should be on a regular basis, on PSAs, on the TV, so that we all learn how to become better stewards of the water. How are we going to pay for this? User fees, I guess, and possibly a bond issue. But I think we need to restructure our two commissions that deal with water, Ivana Water and Sewer Authority and the Albemarle County Service Authority. We need some political input onto those boards so that the people will be represented. Not that the people on the boards are not doing a good job, just that they will do a better job and we'll have a more more active board and a more responsive board than we have at present.
Thank you. So in a moment, again, we're going to have a chance for everybody to respond to each other on these same questions, but to try to focus the discussion a little bit. And one thing I noticed, did we not do one? I'm sorry.
Oh,
my mistake again. Yes.
I thought we were moving right along.
Yeah, I was trying to move you faster. So let's start with Mr. Wyatt.
You're working on that for a couple of years.
Water quality is a major concern. I had a lady call me a couple of years ago after we had a retreat, and she said, "You said water was a lot more critical than transportation." She said, "I live up on 29 North in my district." She says, "I ride down and deal with all that traffic." I said, I responded to her and said, "If you're riding down the road, at least you can get off on another road and get to where you're going. If you turn your spigot on and water does not come out, you don't have another spigot to go to. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're in the public system or in the rural area. This is the issue we're facing. With that said, none of us like irresponsible development. I don't, and I think I don't believe we can find anybody would approve it. We have mitigation ways to handle the erosion control and other things on construction jobs. Anyway, I did a lot of work. I helped develop the erosion control law. I am considered the grandfather of the silt fence. I was the first to test it and put it into a national standard. It's been used internationally. I know what the filtering efficiency of all these different products are being used on the job. Silt fences can go to 95, but they become pretty much a dam. So they have become, this 80% that we moved to is a good level to move to get the silt, the runoff that we have to deal with. The other thing is, in urban areas, one thing that bothers me, and we need to be able to sit down at the table and discuss these without taking sides. I am concerned about the piping systems that we have. You think about going into curb and gutter, and it goes down into, directly into the stream without any kind of filtration. And this is happening in a lot of the urban areas. I think we really need to consider where we want to do curb and gutters and those pipings. I'll give you one example real quick off of the interstate. Interstate, they have 4 pounds of heavy metals per curb mile on every interstate road. So on 1 mile of road, you got 8 pounds of heavy metal going into a stream and goes down a drop in. We're having similar things in our urban development. We need to reconsider those kind of design procedures. Okay.
Thank you. And now, Ms. Malik.
Okay. Well, to protect and improve water quality, last Wednesday I spoke in favor of ordinances to implement stream buffers in the other half of the county. Whitehall District and the whole western side of the county has had setbacks from intermittent streams. We've learned to live with them and understand the importance to keep disturbance out of streams to protect landowners and reservoirs downstream. When I was a kid and South Fork Reservoir was built, nobody seemed to say that in 50 years it was going to be half full of dirt. So we have to know that we have learned different ways to do things. We need to implement those changes to prevent a repeat of another reservoir filling up. I also support regulation in some form for driveways that are put in the rural area. There is no regulation at all for driveways now. No permit, no design, no requirement. We saw some interesting photographs last Wednesday night of roads that have been put in right by the reservoir. So I hope last week the discussion would follow my suggestion to add rigorous construction standards as a first step before waivers, and at the same time protect nearby streams and faraway reservoirs. We could require necessary steps before and during construction, which would preserve that grandchild's wish to live on the farm and yet still protect the community water supply. I hope that soon people will start talking to each other and make some progress on this issue. It is very, very important for our community. Paying for it, the $140 million facing the ratepayers, may become an expense for the county as a whole. It doesn't seem possible the ratepayers will be able to afford that. These public investments are basic supports for the growth industry. It is fair that developers pay their fair share of these improvements. The staff person at RWSA will be tasked with pursuing grants. They're very small compared to the way they were 20 years ago, but Tom Frederick assures me that someone will be researching those. I'll do the rest later on.
Thank you. It seems like everyone had more to say on this topic than they could hardly squeeze in into the minutes. So it's fortunate that there is another minute for you to continue discussion of this issue. It sounds like everyone is against the moonscapes, and generally it seems we have almost consensus that on development runoff we should push for at least an 80% standard. Mm-hmm. So the questions where there's may seems to be some disagreement for the voters to take an interest in include Mr. King's statement that we should stop developing as much as we are because even the best efforts at controlling runoff are going to cause problems. So does anyone else among the candidates support stopping specific developments or drawing the line somewhere in order to protect our water supply? So that's one question. It was interesting that I only heard really the rural area water issues discussed by Ms. Malik. I'm wondering if any of the other candidates support taking any measures to protect the quality of water in rural areas. Okay, we'll go in the same order we just did. And won't forget Whitehall this time, starting with Ms. Joseph.
That's a lot of questions for a minute here.
It's a lot.
It is a lot, because you've got stop development, or you've got groundwater, and we've got LID we're talking about, a low-impact design. There's a lot of things going on. I think that, yeah, development should be stopped if it's not the best thing that's going to happen to this county. If we don't, we should never approve anything that doesn't improve what's going on here. And I've been talking about low-impact design for a very long time now and trying to push that. I'm happy to hear that there's somebody else who wants to push that too, and that is letting the runoff infiltrate, and that has a lot to do with groundwater. I'm extremely concerned about groundwater in the rural areas. I mean, there are people out there who are drilling wells because developments are going next to them, because we don't know how our groundwater acts out there in the hinterlands, and sometimes the wells do go dry, and it's because we don't have aquifers, but whatever it is, those fissures, the water's being sucked out of them, and people are having to go deeper and deeper and deeper. It's a problem.
Mr. Boyd?
Well, in regard to controlling erosion sediment controls, we have been, in as I said before, in every development, major development since Hollymead Town Center, been putting in new techniques, including biofilters for drain fills. We're going to have at North Point and other places, which filters out some of this problems with sediment control. But what I thought I heard you say was that we should stop because it's using up our water supply because of the lack of water supply. So I want to address that. Rezoning doesn't use a drop of water, and it never will. What the Rivanna Water Sewer Authority bases their projections on is the building permits that are being issued. And they do have the authority to stop issuing building permits so that no new houses and no new connections can be done. And that's the way it will be done. The rezonings have been happening a lot faster than we are building homes. If you match, you know, just because we approved 3,100 homes in Biscuit Run doesn't mean it's going to happen this year. It's probably, they say 10 to 15, I bet it's going to be 30 to 40 year build out in that, based on what we're seeing with our population growth and our increase in building.
Thank you. Moving to the Scottsville District, Mr. Fletcher.
I want to talk a little bit about, of course, the paying of this. Once again, I want to go back to the thought that, you know, we have known that we have had this problem coming on for quite some time, and I believe that the current board has only set aside $2 million over the past, since the drought of 2002. We've only set aside $2 million, and that is not even 1% per se of what the overall cost of this is going to be. So that's a lack of planning or of how we're going to pay for this in the future. And that even goes back to the original question of the moral issues of planning for our future. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. King?
The board continues to preach and preach and preach conservation, conserve water. In the same meeting, they unanimously approved 3,100 homes, whether they're built this year, next year, 5 years from now, or 30 years from now. That's not generational justice. What are we leaving for them? We have to start paying attention. And we haven't been paying attention. Shame, shame on them. And I don't think we've ever had geological studies done, and I think few of us in this room actually know where our groundwater comes from those of us who live in the rural area. We just know that there's a deep hole, and when we turn the faucet on, it comes out of our well. We don't know the capacity of the groundwater that exists in Atherwald County. My time up.
Okay, Mr. Dorier.
Well, I talked to the head of the Albemarle County Service Authority, and he was said that as of next year, when we expand the Ragged Mountain Reservoir, put the pipe on the South Fork Rivanna Reservoir, we'll have twice the amount of water we've got now, and that is sufficient water for Biscuit Run. I think we need to address an issue that's been lingering for a long time. South Fork Rivanna, siltation. We need to turn that around and begin to get rid of the siltation. Most of that has been caused by, believe it or not, they say development doesn't cause a lot of that siltation. It's caused by cattle and livestock. And we I'm on the Ravenna Water Basin Commission with Sally Thomas, and we're studying that. 65% of Albemarle County is in the Ravenna Water Basin. So we need to continue to work in that direction.
Thank you. So moving now to the Whitehall District, starting with Mr. Wyant.
Talk of infrastructure and connection. The service authorities need to do the same thing we've done within the county government, and that's determine their cost. They need to look at their infrastructure cost, determine. They make connection fees and charges and all. They have to do that analysis, and it has to be current. We've done it within the general government. So they handle that, and they need to be involved. Today, one thing I'll have to say for the present board and what it did, it listened to the nursery operators that came in. We put the restriction on 3 gallons. And if you took a 3-gallon bucket and just poured the water on it, it ends up, a lot of it runs off. They were saying like the Sokos. They made a lot of changes today, talking to the folks who are directly involved in that. I think a lesson we learned from that is talk to the folks that walk in those shoes. Rural wells and all. I was opposed, and I believe we got 2 large Barnington wells. I was opposed because I think what we could do to determine our groundwater level, which is the unknown, is by monitoring individual wells, finding individuals, allow us to determine the water level. On my wells at home, I keep track of that.
Okay. And Ms. Malik.
I'll pick up where I left off about drought management question for a minute. Back in the 1970s, RWSA's own staff put out a report suggesting a 20% conservation level, and we're at a 5% or so. So we have a long way to go, and the idea of having it be forever throughout the year, not just during a drought, is an excellent idea. For those of us who have always been on wells, you never let your water run when you're brushing your teeth. I mean, these kinds of things are just so elementary, because you know if your well runs dry, there's no one coming to your rescue. You don't have some public authority coming to take care of you. Talking about rezonings and how they should only be approved if they're a benefit, it seems to me we've looked a lot at the financial benefit to the county regarding the rezonings we've done, how we can shift some of the possible taxpayer costs to the developer and give up something in return. We also have benefits to the county that must be provided way beyond the borders of that particular piece of property, and also the effects of that beyond the borders.
I thank you to all the members of the audience who contributed questions. Our format that had been agreed ahead of time was that I would ask one question, I would ask a series of questions, but we would allow each of the members of the forum tonight to address each question. So, and everybody has only 1 minute, but that still means each question will take at least 7 minutes to get through. So since we're trying to wind this up by soon after 9:30, it probably means we'll only be able to do 3 questions. So if I don't get to your question, I apologize. I'm trying to choose ones that address topics that were not covered very much tonight. Good. So if your topic has already been covered somewhat, that's the reason I was not able to choose it. Let me start with a question about transportation in the Pantops area. Our question on transportation focused on the 29 North area, but there are also some issues involving congestion in Pantops and the lack of alternative crossings of the Ravenna River. So the question for the members of the panel is, will you work to construct the footbridge across the Ravenna River at or near the Riverside Park to the new Martha Jefferson Hospital? And how would you do that? Will you work to get the Ravenna Greenway to Key West built within your term of office? And how will you make that happen? So again, ways to mitigate the traffic jam on Pantops by encouraging people to walk and bike across the Ravenna River by building that kind of infrastructure. So if we can get each member of the group to respond to that question, the order, let's see. Let's go back to the first order we used, Scottsville District, starting with Mr. King.
Thank you. I love pedestrian overpasses. I think they're great. I think they're affordable. The one thing that I'm deeply concerned about, since the Glenmore area is in the Scottsville Magisterial District, I have gone out to Glenmore on many, many mornings very early, and I've sat there at Glenmore Way, and I've taken a left turn onto 250 heading west. And the longest it's taken me was 42 minutes to get from Glenmore to Free Bridge. So I really want to address that issue for the Glenmore residents in those areas out in the eastern part of the Scottsville Magisterial District.
Thank you. Mr. Dorier.
I think we should put, we've got some trails and bike people working for the county. We should put them to work right away to design a path going out to cross Free Bridge out to Glenmore. The best bike path we can make and the best walking trail we can make. As to whether we can put a footbridge over the Ravana, I don't know whether we can do that right now, but I think that's a good idea, but perhaps we're going to have to wait till we get a second span of the Free Bridge to go to do that. In any event, I think that should be a high priority, that we should push the bike and pedestrian trail, and if I'm elected, I pledge to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher.
Certainly the footbridge would be a wonderful idea. We need to check on the cost and whether certainly see if that is within fundable in the budget. I believe the question also had something about the Rivanna Greenway, whether that would be done within, I guess, the 4 years of which I would be in office. And, you know, I'll just be honest with you, I would say no, because I think there are certainly many other traffic issues that that need to be addressed ahead of time. There's a six-year plan that VDOT works on, and I don't think that would certainly happen within the next 4 years. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Great, we're going to move to the next district. Whitehall District, starting with Mr. Wyand.
I think as citizens are looking for bikes and walking trails, and what we need to look at is making sure we have connectivity. I have said this several times since I've been on the board. The problem that they had in the city, they didn't have all the properties agreed to, and we had to raise a wire incident in town. We need to look at our bike and walking trails as a master approach to making sure folks can go from place to place, and they're using it for exercises and other means. So where we cross the river, we're gonna need to be working with the city. I think that having good relationship with the city and those on the other side, because there is connectivity to the city over into the county.
Thank you, Ms. Mallock.
I'm intrigued by the pedestrian bridge from Riverside Park, because that would help to connect the Woolen Mills area direct to Pantops, which is a very, very long way around mm-hmm. if you're in a car. The Greenway idea of pathways, we're talking about pedestrian pathways in the step back from the river up to Key West from Pre-Bridge is a wonderful idea. Part of it's already done through the park, and hopefully with willing landowners to donate the right-of-way for pedestrian access, that would be something we could accomplish. I'll stop there because I can't read my writing.
Okay. Ms. Joseph?
Maybe I can read her writing. I've heard this concept before when we were looking at the Pantops plan, and asked that it be placed in, and the concept is the pedestrian bicycle bridge, because we had a member of the public come before the Planning Commission and talk about that, and it was a brilliant idea, thinking that when Martha Jefferson moves its facilities, that many people who live in the city will want to come out. Well, they'll have to come out if they work for Martha Jefferson. And to get them to be using bicycles, et cetera, it would be a simple way, or a less expensive way, to get people out there and about. So I absolutely support that and ask that it be placed in the Pantops Master Plan. The Greenway to Key West, I think, is also a great idea, especially if it's bicycle. I don't know whether or not that can happen within the next 4 years. I'd be disingenuous to tell you yes, but I think that's another way of getting people on bicycles into Pantops. Thank you.
Mr. Boyd.
Well, there's already some initiatives going on with that. I know that being a resident of Key West, I know that they've been talking, Dan Mahan has been talking to Key West residents for years trying to get that Greenway up there. Mm-hmm. And we may be able to facilitate both of these issues in the next 4 years with the help of the Lewis and Clark Foundation, because the Lewis and Clark Foundation is already looking at putting a walking bridge over at that location now. It's not over where near the Woolen Mills area, but the path does go on the other side of the river, such as you could bicycle then and come over to it. So there are some initiatives already going on that wouldn't involve county dollars, and I think they're also interested in extending the path up towards the Key West area also. So I think we ought to work with Lewis and Clark and maybe partner with them, and we could have a public-private partnership with them and maybe get these things done. I think it could be, it's possible.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we've covered all the districts this time. Second question, I'm looking at a couple of cards here, and I'm synthesizing them, that are talking about the tension between growth and tax rate. So a couple of people asked, isn't it true that growth never really pays for itself? And if that's true, is it possible to be both for a continuation of current rates of growth and for low taxes? Or if you don't think it's possible to be both for low taxes and for continuing growth, which one are you going to choose? Okay.
You starting with me? You're looking at me.
No, I'm using the order that we went with second, which started with Ms. Malik. This time you have no preparation.
That's all right. Actually, I've been living this for a long time. 30 years ago, people recognized that residential growth did not pay for itself, and our Fiscal Impact Committee, which represents a lot of staff and electeds in Albemarle, did come out with an official determination of the 20-year loss to the county residents, the county budget, for services provided to each resident. And I rounded off at $800 to $1,000 per unit per year, which is missing from our commitment, our payments as individual landowners, homeowners, to the county budget. So commercial properties, business taxes, all those things are what contribute to that deficit. But it is definitely something we have to consider and understand that there are always going to be losses to the community pocketbook when we grow. And we have to balance all those growth, those costs, with the benefits we might be getting and be very aware of those.
Thank you. Mr. Wine?
I believe we have to manage growth. I think some of our numbers show that today the growth rate is a little bit less than 1%. I think it's 0.7% of late. We've averaged about a 1.5%. So we're doing it. I believe we can cut the tax rate. As you know, I've supported two tax rate cuts. And the reason I feel like we can even still handle that is I've worked in the CIP Oversight Committee. We cut $39 million before we ever got back to the board with that. The other thing is we're becoming more efficient within the county government. I went through four or five cuts in state government when I was there. I thought it was going to kind of ruin my program, but we were successful still in that time. So I think we're challenging our staff and others to look at new ways of doing things. We have also, I'm proud our board has gotten, come up with the profits numbers we've come up with. I was really disturbed at first when we were just kind of pulling numbers out the air and matching up. Now we got some numbers of how we can match it up to our CIP requirements.
Mr. Boyd.
As a member of the Fiscal Impact Committee, I can tell you that I've been studying this thing for about a year, as well as we worked on a proffer policy for our board and what to present to it. And I think that based on the formula that we certainly used there, that I would agree that growth does not pay for itself. But I'm not sure that formula is up to date in the most recent statistics today as it should be. I think one of the other things, there's no way to correlate how much growth generates retail and office and business revenue to the county. Of course, we know that's where we make up the offset for a two-child family that has at $11,300 or whatever it is now per child at school. It's not paying that amount of taxes for it. So what we really need to do, I think, is work on those formulas and get a correlation between those two. I think the other thing we need to look at is that I think that our per capita number for our schools is probably much lower than state averages because of our flat growth that we've had at school for so many years.
Thank you. Ms. Joseph?
This really is a tough question because, again, I'm just repeating, everybody knows that residential growth doesn't pay for itself. It just doesn't. If we start thinking about other ways that maybe we want to raise revenue, and I know that one of the things that's happened recently is we're all talking about, or we have been talking about, is this NGIC
thing and having people come in. And, you know, initially you might think that, well, this will give us some more tax-based revenue, but let's all remind ourselves it's feds and they're going to own the land and they're not going to pay us any taxes. What's going to happen is we're going to bring 800 more people in here, and I don't believe that we've asked the feds to help us with this either. So, I mean, that's just another issue of some of the stuff that's going around that maybe we could start help. That's intimidating. But that's okay. But anyways, I really think we need to think about those issues, too, of what's coming here and what are we really encouraging when something like that happens.
Mr. Doyle? Well, I think that we're looking now more at homes for retirees and that sort of thing. And these are people that don't have school children to educate. So that there would be less cost for retirees than there would be for a regular family. And I think if we gear certain of our developments to the retired people, that perhaps the growth will not break the bank more or less. And I think that we need to move in that direction, and that we as David was saying, we need to manage our dollars better than we have been doing. We need to cut. I serve on that audit committee, too, and we need to cut as much as we can out of the county budget. We need to reduce the tax rate, and we need to look at every piece of the budget.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher?
Certainly, residential growth does not pay for itself. That's why I think we need to raise the cash proffer amount. I think currently right now, I think it's a 17.5. I think certainly we could go up, higher to above 20,000 to help to pay for the cost of growth. So that certainly is one aspect of it. You know, as far as we need to do a better job in talking about our management of our funds. That's something that we've been needing to do and should have been doing for quite some time. And that's it. Thank you.
And finally, Mr. King.
Mr. Moderator, would you reread the question, please?
The question: do you agree with the statement that there is the growth does not pay for itself? And if it's true that it doesn't pay for itself, and you had to choose between growth and low taxes, which one would you choose?
Thank you. I'm currently against the current rate of growth, and I believe that growth doesn't pay for itself. I think that the taxpayers pay for the growth. All the taxpayers pay for the growth. We have to start putting an end to special favors to special people. And I believe that there's a lot of that going on. I mean, there are those in the county who simply say, hey, when you pay the amount of taxes that I do, I'm entitled to special favors. Shame on them. Their income far exceeds my income. So they shouldn't have those complaints. And I'm against, I certainly want to start policing more the land use taxation privileges. Since moving here nearly now 16 years ago, I've seen many, many faux farms without a cow on it, without any crops growing on them, without any grapes growing on them, and yet these people are receiving incredible land use taxation breaks. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we've gone through all the districts, and so we're going to do a third question. I think if we're going to finish on time, this will be our final question. I'm going to combine two different ones that I got that both raise questions about who's going to bear the costs of solving the problems in the way we heard tonight. There's some concern that that lower income members of the community may lose out from some of the policies that have been advocated. So one question is, when considering all these growth and development questions, how can you reconcile that goal with the goal of having more affordable housing? So we've heard, for instance, that the way to deal with making growth pay for itself is to boost the amount of dollars that every new house has to pay. That means those houses are not going to be as affordable. So if you agree that there's a trade-off there, how are you going to reconcile that and provide affordable housing? Second question, relatedly, looks at some of the candidates advocated a gas tax as a way to discourage driving and also raise the money for transit. And asks, why should this is a regressive tax, lower income people pay a larger proportion of their income on a gas tax. So why should lower income people bear the costs of solving this problem? Shouldn't those who profit from growth pay for those costs? Okay? Uh-huh. So that will be our final question, and we're going to start with the Rivanna District with Ms. Joseph.
Okay. Affordable housing aspect, every rezoning that comes through requirement is 15% is affordable housing. That manifests itself in proffers that the affordable housing is only good for 5 years, which is the most amazing thing, because then it can be flipped or whatever and sold as regular market rate housing. There's a group out there that I've been working with very closely that is proposing a community land trust, and they just keep moving forward on this and getting closer and closer. It's been done in Burlington, Vermont since 1984. It's something that works. I think that affordable housing, that can work in this community because it would be in perpetuity, and that can be a public-private partnership. I have talked to developers who are actually interested in doing that. I've talked to the city. They're interested in you know, nothing solid, but at least people are talking about it, and they're interested, and they're positive. The gas tax, it is a regressive tax. I know that, but I also know that there are people who are driving Hummers that ought to be taxed on something, so we've got to find some way to stop that. Stop.
Thank you. Yeah, I know that was a bit much to kind of combine things and give you just 1 minute. But Mr. Boyd gets the challenge next.
Thank you. First of all, with reference to the gas tax, I've never been a strong proponent of that. I've never really felt that was the way we ought to solve our problem. I think what we ought to look at is the transportation district and how we might charge those commercial users and whatever for that type of price. Affordable housing, I think there's a solution out there, and I think we're going to find it. I think that what Marcia just mentioned, the land trust, I've seen the information on that. I think it's very promising. It's not been done in Virginia yet. There's a lot of legal hurdles that have to be gone through. Certainly partnering with people like Habitat with Humanity is, I think, an effort for that. But to do this, I think we have to separate, we have to take apart this generic affordable housing thing, because affordable housing can mean 80% of median income, which is what we target in our land use policies. It also means 30% or under 50%. A median income, which is a different type of housing, and we also have this section called workforce housing, which is 100 to 125%, which is really two teachers that are married together is in that workforce housing. So we need to separate those three issues and look at them independently, and I hope that is what's going to come out of the task force with UVA and the city and county that's going on now.
Thank you.
Sorry to talk so fast.
Moving to the Scottsville District, Mr. Fletcher.
Certainly, we need the more affordable housing in the sense that we have not one affordable house has been built yet in Albemarle County. We talk a great deal about how hopefully someday we're going to figure something out. I like the idea of the land trust. It certainly seems like a great project to me. But we need to do something. We have to end. We have to stop the talk of different ideas and different solutions, and we never really get anything accomplished. So we need affordable housing, and we need to get it done. Thank you.
Mr. King.
Thank you. I would like to know how we currently audit the promised proffers. Do we collect every penny that these developers promise us that they're going to pay us? Number one. And I want to encourage builders to build 10 affordable dwellings than one mega mansion that now we have a glut of inventory of anyway. With respect to affordable housing and workforce housing, we have the University of Virginia, who is the largest consumer of affordable housing. They need to step up to the plate too and maybe start building some new dormitories and releasing some of this affordable housing to the 18,000 plus employees that travel back and forth from two counties away to go to work every day, and where they could live within 5 or 10 or 15 minutes of their job. Thank you.
Mr. Dorier.
Well, I had the privilege of going to North Carolina with PEC and Jeff Werner and Brian Wheeler. And while I was down there, we looked at the housing and we talked with people. And this community trust idea of Marsha Joseph is a good idea. And that seems to me that that is what we need to work towards. We need to set up a community trust fund that's going to buy back the houses from the low-income people who own them if they have to move and resell their house. This keeps the prices low, artificially low, because the trust actually owns the property. So I think we need to move in that direction. And once we get that set up, then like Kevin is saying, that we need to move ahead on this. We're going to see some affordable housing coming down the pike once we get this community trust fund set up.
Thank you. Moving finally then on our final question to the Whitehall District, starting with Mr. Wyatt.
First on affordable housing, differ with some of the other panels, and that we have affordable housing. We have a large number on the books, but just recently we placed 8 families in, I believe it's in 9 houses have been built out on Avon Street. It was done by the developer. All the developer searched out, found the folks, and placed them in there, and the only thing that the county did was qualify them. We need to take a serious look at what our policy is and how we go about doing that. I will tell you, I'm for affordable housing because we need everybody across our whole society in our community. I voted against it because of the implementation, and this, I feel like, proves that what I was saying. We have not implemented affordable housing, even though they're on the books. When it gets to gas tax and the transportation district, I think you need to do an economic analysis. I will go back, and when you're looking at a gas tax, it is the user. I know with my experience within VDOT and the damages of tractor trailers due to the road, that cost gets passed on to the end user. So is that going to happen to us with transportation districts?
Thank you. Finally, Ms. Malik.
Okay. One extra fact about the affordable housing that I think would help us is if the developers, when they're building affordable units, they really build a house that is valued at that affordable price, mm-hmm. rather than a house that really is built to sell for $80,000 more and is somehow by arrangement or proffer agreed to be sold for a limited amount of time at the lower price. It seems that the houses built so they're valued that way will tend to stay more affordable over time as all the different homes are revalued. Anytime you can take the land cost out of the situation, then there is a greater chance to build more affordable housing. Last week we had a proposal before the board for Willow Glen, which had proposed what I thought was a really great idea, $1 million revolving fund. This was money put up by the investors for this unit so that this money would be loaned out to as down payment assistance and other ways for people who lived in this development, who could then, when they sold, take a percentage of their equity and move on, and some part of that money would be put back into the fund. There were lots of different sizes, so people could start out at a small apartment and move up perhaps over their lifetime into something much larger as their family grew. Keep the same neighbors, keep their friends. It seemed like a wonderful idea and something I hope will continue.
Well, thank you very much for taking on a lot of very difficult and complicated questions within very brief periods of time. I believe all the candidates up here are willing to spend a few minutes chatting with you. If you were not able to ask your question and through this note card, so please do catch the candidates before they run off and engage them in a conversation. I want to thank all of you for coming out on a hot night, hot October night, and thank the candidates for joining us for our panel today. And I'm going to let the last word...